As Canadian citizens, we embrace diversity, so much so that it's a strong component of our national identity. But how exactly do we define diversity? Is it living with citizens of different ethnicities, cultures? What about people of different intellectual and physical abilities? Although we may claim to favor diversity, recent trends in our society may not be reflecting those claims. In Canada, there are about 35,000 people living with Down syndrome. However, new prenatal screening and diagnostic techniques are now able to identify fetuses with Down syndrome a few months into pregnancy. Today, we'll be discussing the implications of this testing for the community. Here with us is Dr. Ashley Malloy, the president of the Down Syndrome Association of Toronto. Dr. Malloy holds a PhD in special education and is highly involved as an advocate for people with a wide range of abilities. He has received numerous awards for his commitment to the special needs population.
You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Welcome, Dr. Malloy. Thank you for being with us today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be able to be here with you, and I look forward to sharing some information and knowledge with your listeners.
Great. We welcome you to Health Justice Radio.
Great.
So, first, I'd like to spend just a couple minutes talking about kind of the mission of the Down Syndrome Association of Toronto and what its objectives are in the community.
Well, the Down Syndrome Association was started by parents seeking support, seeking networking, and seeking a framework to ensure that their children lived a full life and that their children would be involved in activities relating to school and relating to daycare and relating to recreational activities. So they just basically felt that their children were not being treated the same as other children, and they saw that as a need to rally together. So the history is that it was a parent volunteer group who saw a need for justice, I guess, for their children. As a result, it is a volunteer charitable organization that is basically run by parent volunteers and many other generous volunteers who provide service and take their talents to projects and to events that we, as the Down Syndrome Association, organize. And basically, I guess, a chief function is to provide service to our member families and to empower our families to be able to support their children as they move through the different phases of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also to advocate for legislative changes, to advocate for better health identification by doctors in terms of how to assist and look after the health and wellness of our children as they proceed through life. And then I think it's also to ensure that we project the abilities of our children and of our members' families. In other words, I think that still, as you mentioned, society tends to look at persons with intellectual disabilities through the lens of deficits and not see them through the lens of assets.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of our kids and our young people as diverse ability. That's the topic for me, it's diverse ability. They have different abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And being the parent of Lindsay, I always say when people say, oh, you have Lindsay, and I say, yes, she is gifted with Down syndrome because all of our children and all of our young people and all of our adults. They bring special talents to the world. They see things through a different lens, and it's a very positive lens. So maybe that's a bit of a kind of an overview.
Great. I really like that term that you use, gifted with Down syndrome. I know having a sister myself with Down syndrome, I definitely feel the same way. So thank you for that. And I'd like to talk a bit about prenatal screening and diagnosis. So these involve procedures like amniocentesis and a new non-invasive DNA test that's available in just in the U.S. It's called Sequenome. And these kind of procedures allow mothers to make decisions about their pregnancy. And you mentioned a fact to me earlier that statistics tell us that about 90% of women in the United States who find out they have a fetus with Down syndrome will terminate the pregnancy. And I'm wondering if we can speak a little bit about maybe some of the factors that are leading to these trends and why do you think this is happening?
Well, I think that first of all, I think in the instance of improving communication, I think that the medical schools, for example, should certainly spend some of their time in terms of training our future doctors and maybe even in some in-service for our doctors in what constitutes healthcare, first of all, for Down syndrome in the post-birth era. But also, when the news is delivered, I think the doctors certainly have the obligation to diagnose it correctly. They also have the obligation, of course, to inform the parents. That is what they have to do legally. But I think what we're working, or I guess what we find is, it's the method of, first of all, when the baby is born, it's the method of delivering the news. I think that it's important that that's a very traumatic moment. And therefore, while we're giving the news, I think it's how we give the news and the sensitivity. This would also go to when to diagnose. Diagnosis through amniocentesis, for example, is that, by the way, you have a child, you're carrying a child with trisomy 21, then I think that it's important that the cessation of the pregnancy is one option that needs to be presented, okay? But then we also need to look at the other option, you know, because sometimes if you only get one point of view and it's maybe not delivered sensitively or carefully, and you believe, I guess, as an expectant mom that your life is over or it's going to be terrible. And in some cases, many moms maybe do it because they think maybe for the benefit of their child, they don't want their child to have maybe less of a full life. So I think that there's a lot of emotions there in terms of the information. I know for myself that when we were, you know, talked about, okay, an amniocentesis test with our doctor when my wife was pregnant with Lindsay, we asked a question, well, why? What's the purpose of it? And it was to determine the gender. And I said, well, that's irrelevant to us. We don't need to know, you know, months in advance. And the second reason was if there's any sort of medical concern. And I said, well, that wouldn't be one for us. Now, you know, in our case, the doctor knew that he had to present that because that's part of his or her legal obligation. But they also knew us in terms of our personal beliefs and values, that would not have been an option. So that's not a criticism to the people who decide that the pregnancy needs to be terminated. I think we need to understand that, you know, I guess what we always want to understand is there's all sorts of reasons, and there are, it's not just a simple matter of that, because I am, you know, certain that when women make that decision, it is very traumatic for them that they go through a lot of anguish and do not make it without a lot of pain. So therefore, you know, we need to understand that motherhood, being Mother's Day tomorrow, that motherhood has a special bond that only moms can have because they bear the baby in their womb for the 9 months. So it's just that I would like moms to be able to see what I have had, and that's the joy of having my daughter in our lives. I cannot imagine our life without Lindsay, because it is just filled to the brim, and I think that would be the same for all of us parents. So I think it's just, I would just like to ensure that when moms are thinking about that, that at least is part of the conversation, you know? And then they're going to make the decision based on their own circumstances, and I trust that they will make the decision that they think is in the best interest of their child.
So what do you think is kind of leading to this lack of knowledge or information provided by the healthcare providers? Do you think it's a lack of education, exposure?
Well, I think that, for example, in terms of GPs, general practitioners in Toronto, we don't have, first of all, in Toronto, any sort of a doctor who has kind of like maybe a clinic or maybe even as a GP taken on a specialty with Down syndrome. We have good practitioners who basically we as parents trust, and therefore we know that they will be kind and they will do their best. But I think in fairness to the practitioners, they have so many things that they have to be up on, an expert on, that we can't expect them to know everything. So I think in my case, Down syndrome, we provide the doctor with some of the things, for example, that he needed to monitor on Lindsay, and I think that that's fairness, because I think we have to help our medical practitioners with knowledge that we have, mm-hmm. because we live with the child, and I think we know certain things, whereas they deal with patients of all different age groups and so on. So I think that, you know, the idea of the education, for example, I think it's important. For example, if I was in charge of the medical college, I would certainly have an opportunity for a parent group, an organization such as ours, to go in and maybe have a little part of their session on the whole idea of delivering the news and the sensitivity, mm-hmm. but also to acquaint them of some of the challenges for parents, how parents have to work through all sorts of concerns, mm-hmm. because there's no one-size-fits-all with Down syndrome, I say. If you have diagnosed or met one person with Down syndrome, then you have met one person with Down syndrome. I think we tend to kind of commodify them and say, oh, well, I think this is what it is, because while there are certain commonalities and certain medical concerns that you have to monitor, mm-hmm. not all of the children are born with heart conditions that need right. to be monitored and so on. So they're very unique patients. So I think that an awareness, I think, would be the first place to start. And I think that, again, if moms and families have that balanced, all of the knowledge together, then we trust that they will make a more informed decision.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, if a couple is faced with a decision like this, are there any opportunities for them to maybe meet with a family who has a child with Down syndrome, or how would they go about getting more information?
Well, we have a pilot parent program, therefore, with different ethnic backgrounds, because, again, not everybody, English is not necessarily mm-hmm. the first language, especially in Toronto. So we do have, I think, the best support for a family who is, first of all, making a decision, or who has made the decision and now maybe in some cases it might be a surprise, so it may not have known in advance, mm-hmm. that the best kind of support they can get is from a peer family who, you know, like myself and many of our other members, can talk about something from having a child with Down syndrome, because people want to know the real deal. I don't think you can speak about something that you have not experience, because it has no validity.
Yeah.
So I think that the best connector is parent to parent, so they can ask, whether even culturally sensitive, mm-hmm. okay, so that's important, so that they can maybe share, you know, we have them maybe come over together and have a meal, we can see the child who has Down syndrome with the host family. So I think it's very important that they also know through us that we are here and we are here to support them, mm-hmm. Either in their decision or to support them in the aftermath of their decision.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great program.
Well, thank
great. You. And so I'm wondering, with kind of the onset of these new procedures, screening and diagnosis, have we seen any changes in the number of people in Canada with Down syndrome?
Well, I think that we are looking at, we haven't had any recent statistics, but I am just kind of going because I think that Canadian statistics generally reflect American. We're not that different. And if these numbers in the United States are, as they are, I think that basically if we translate that to Canada, I'm just thinking, well, in 10 or 15 years, will there be nobody who has gotten or who has been able to experience the light of all of our kids, because mm-hmm. I experience it, as you have seen today in this program, and it's a special joy, it's a special talent, it's a special gift that they bring to this world. The gifts that they bring are non-judgment, full embracement of the person, black, white, pink, purple, gay, lesbian, straight. They just want mm-hmm. to be friends. And I thought, wow, if the world was filled with and run by persons with Down syndrome, what a wonderful world it would be. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very focused on the fact that I feel kind of mortally wounded by the fact that there's so much joy that's not being allowed to be able to lighten up this world. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, speak out on that and support, information and so on. So, again, it's not to decide for the mom or the family, okay, whether or not they decide to keep their pregnancy or not. As I said earlier, that's a traumatic experience. There's all sorts of variables that are involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know that there is joy to having a child with Down syndrome, mm-hmm. and that it's not all negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I speak from experience, and I deal with hundreds of parents, and I speak to hundreds of people around the world, and that's my message, is that they bring joy to the world and they have a talent,
mm-hmm.
they have a skill. So anytime we find a particular group that seems to be marginalized and maybe seen as some sort of, as I said, deficit group, I think that that's a problem with our society that we need to address.
Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned before, I also have a sister with Down syndrome.
Lucky you.
And my mother has often raised concerns about these new procedures and the implications that they'll have for the community of people already living with Down syndrome. So if there's less people being born with Down syndrome, maybe services provided will decrease. There will be less available. I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
Well, I think that it's like if we have a group that seems to be becoming smaller and smaller, then when you look at government programs, they look at a population that seems to be decreasing,
mm-hmm.
and I therefore think that they would look at their allotment of resources in terms of needs and say, well, there's only 2 or 3% of the population, and therefore, more service becomes reduced or even removed. And that would, I think, add more burden on the families who are dealing with all sorts of life's concerns, putting
mm-hmm.
food on the table and educating their kids and so on and so forth. So I think that the streamlining, I call it like the streamlining, where we're trying to almost design the perfect specimen, if you will, of a human being, I see that as problematic. In any group, I mean,
mm-hmm.
our history has looked at where we've tried to get the people who don't belong, who don't fit in because they are not in the dominant cultures in their view to be the proper type of
mm-hmm.
created human being. I think that that's a real problem for me. I think that our community in terms of Down syndrome, when you look at Canada, the population of, let's say, 35 to 40 million, and we have maybe 35,000 and their families and so on, but really very, very small drop in the population ocean of Canada. So I think that we have to look at medical technology, and we have to always look at it through an ethical lens,
mm-hmm.
not just the fact that, well, everybody has a right to this, that, and the other. Okay, but like, again, is it what are the ethical consequences? Because certainly doctors take the Hippocratic Oath to
mm-hmm.
preserve life at all costs. I mean, that's the fundamental. Also,
mm-hmm.
I think that we need to look at the new technology in terms of medical usage, and I think we really need to look at it and remember, how is this impacting all of society, including the very smallest of minority groups, such as persons with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm. So to me, it seems almost like a cycle where maybe new parents faced with a decision like this, because there's already maybe less infants being born with Down syndrome, maybe families are getting less exposure out in the community, out in society. It seems almost like a cycle that's just spiraling. What do you think about that? How do you think that's going to kind of stop that cycle?
Well, I mean, I think that minority groups have always depended on their message getting out. When people roll up their sleeves, ordinary grassroots folks, in our case, parents, who ensure that they ask for nothing special for their kids, they just ask for equity in the treatment of their kids and of their young people. And to me, people sometimes confuse equality with equity. Equality is giving everybody the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like to look at equity as being what we're seeking for our community, and that is that they receive what they need to be on a level playing field with able-bodied persons. Mm-hmm. We're not asking for special things, but for example, in the physically disabled, and we have some kids who have got dual diagnosis, they have Down syndrome, and they also have a physical disability, well, they need wheelchairs to move forward. To me, that's not something. They just have a different mobility mm-hmm. method. So I would see that that is something that is part of society that doesn't give them a special, it just enables them to do what people who can
right.
walk do.
Yeah.
But I think that advocacy always is something that comes from the heart in our community. So, you know, no matter how big or how small, we as parents and we as an organization, together with the national organization for sure, need to always be visible. We always need to be, for example, outreaching. So maybe we work with our teachers in the schools and we see, okay, what is it that can help our kids to shine, whether it's academically, whether it's in the spring concert, whether it's in the choir. How do we demonstrate that we want a country that promotes equity for all
mm-hmm.
by having them front and center, involved just like every other
mm-hmm.
person or every other kid? It goes
mm-hmm.
for employment, it goes for recreation, it goes for education.
Right.
So, you know, the greatest people that we think about who have changed the views of people, even on established laws, and I always think of, for example, Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King, who saw that, for example, exclusion based on the color of your skin, even though it was legislated and in the laws of the nations at that time, they said, no, this was wrong,
mm-hmm.
and they marched, and of course, look what happened. So I think that we never give up about our size. We just believe that we have to get more and more information out there, and again, more and more opportunities for, as our Sunshine Gang, as you just saw a moment ago, are going to do at the conference, and that is to show, hey, they have got abilities and they have gifts to bring, like they entertain at senior citizen homes. They bring joy to these seniors who see them as just a delight,
mm-hmm.
and I think that that's the way that's the way that I think that we need to kind of like change the views and to be able to maybe change the trend of well, gee, you know, what use are they and what purpose do they serve and can they do anything?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the conference, which is upcoming this weekend. Can you just provide the listeners with a few details about that?
Certainly. The Canadian National Down Syndrome Society conference is taking place in Toronto at the Delta Chelsea Inn Friday, Saturday, and Sunday upcoming, which is the Victoria Day weekend. It is a special conference in that it is celebrating the CDSS 25th year, so that's a very, very important benchmark. And on Friday night, we, as the organization here in Toronto, the local organization, have been accorded the honor of providing the welcoming event, which on Friday is simply a family-centered, child-centered welcome to Toronto. So it is all about families and kids, with all sorts of activities for the kids, also with a talent show, which shows and demonstrates the talents of our different kids
mm-hmm.
doing different kinds of things. And there's popcorn and so on and so forth. So it's a real kind of a family
mm-hmm.
kind of festival atmosphere, because we wanted to welcome the families from across Canada in a very positive way. And it also provides a great opportunity for parents to just relax, and their kids are kids, and for them to be able to network with each other. And then Saturday and Sunday, there are a variety of seminars across the spectrum from, again, healthcare, as well as you know, management, as well as education, as well as looking at how groups can kind of advocate or get funding and those kinds of governance rules. So there's a variety of opportunities there to learn. There is also, of course, a pre-conference, which is totally providing some medical speakers. So it's just basically for maybe medical or health professionals. Mm-hmm. And parents are welcome to go, too. So that's a pre-conference on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then there will be, of course, our closing banquet on Friday night, where there are some awards, or sorry, Sunday night, which there are some awards going to be provided by the CDSS in recognition of different areas of contributions. But it's also going to have a very active involvement from our volunteers who are persons with Down syndrome. I always think, and we all believe, that nothing about us without us. So I don't want, and I'm very sure that we are there to support, but I think, for example, our girls were able to go and introduce the speaker and thank the speaker. Mm-hmm. They can do things. And just have some support there so that they get the right place. Mm-hmm. But they are well able and very competent in delivering certain aspects themselves. And
right.
I think it's very important for us as the parents and maybe as the organizer and the supporters to be in the back of the stage. We're on the stage with them, but we're in the background, mm-hmm. and to let them shine because mm-hmm. they can certainly handle it.
For sure. So for people who are interested in being advocates for those with special needs, what would you say is the best way to get involved?
I think that, first of all, they've got the passion, obviously, I mean, and they want to do something. So that's the driving force.
Mm-hmm.
I said what they need then is to find out a direction, for example. So if they're not sure, or they haven't figured out, or they have some sort of idea, certainly a call to our office here, and we could kind of discuss it, and then we could see what they're interested in and provide them with some guidance. For example, just to let you know, we had a parent, a young lady who's one of our volunteers, one of our members, who has a sister with Down syndrome, and who said about a month ago, I want to do something. I wanted, you know. Anyway, she organized, as part of our monthly dance rock, a dance-a-thon, and again, wanted to raise money to support our welcome night as part of the CDSS Society Conference, and it was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a person who was driven by a purpose and, you know, worked with us. We came up with an idea that met her needs, met our needs, and the end result was a win-win situation mm-hmm. for our community, and I think that's what we both wanted. So, you know, there's no idea that's too big, too small. Some people might do a car wash
yeah.
to raise money because they want to get exposure. They might want to go into their place of worship and be involved in that way. They
mm-hmm.
may want to go to their school. I think it's very important that the parents who have kids in schools realize that there is the parent advisory council.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's nobody there to speak up for persons with disabilities, if they're all parents who have able-bodied kids, I think that that's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. And I think they need to maybe see about how can they serve in that regard, just to make sure that their voice is there as part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, keeping track of, obviously, the websites, our website and our Facebook, to know what's going on. There are sometimes particular legislative decisions or policies that we need to stand up for,
mm-hmm.
and certainly we monitor that. And then also, of course, nationally, we are related to CDSS and have membership with them, so they kind of remind us when there is something of a national issue that we need to address.
Mm-hmm. So that the website is DSAT.
www.dsat.ca.
Okay.
And it's filled with all the resources. It's got regular video clips. We're on Facebook. Again, it's got the Facebook page. So
mm-hmm.
it certainly keeps people up to date. And right now, with people being very busy, I think that certainly the electronic or the social media is one of the options
mm-hmm.
for them. And then our newsletter also goes out 4 times a year. But when there's a question or when there's a concern or when there's something that needs to be answered, the best thing is to either email or contact the office,
mm-hmm.
and then we go forward from there, because we always need volunteers and all ideas are something that we welcome.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So it seems we've run out of time, but thank you so much, Dr. Malloy, for being with us today on Health Justice Radio. We really appreciate your time.
Well, my pleasure, and I hope that it provides some caveats of knowledge and also lets everybody know maybe that Down syndrome is alive and well. And when you next time you meet a person with Down syndrome, just believe that you are meeting class.
Thank you so much.